Thank you, Rav Turetsky and Brashos Sori Goldsmith. First, just to start with Hakar Satov, we're very fortunate to have two girls who have gone to Shalavim for Women. Neither one in the most normative of times. Our older daughter was here during COVID, and now this year. And we greatly appreciate all the ruchnias that our girls have been given here at Shalavim, and also the great care that's been shown to them. So thank you. I don't always read school newsletters. I looked at the Shalavim newsletter this past Friday, and I did see there were shiurim given on Parshas Truma, constructing a Mishkan. So I apologize if parts of this are repetitive at all. Chazar is always good, but hopefully, if nothing else, we walk away with some sense of chizak. And I want to focus on trying to build ourselves. Right, our time in Israel is very, very special. First of all, just to tell you as a visitor to never take for granted the unique privilege and opportunity you have this year to sit here in a wonderful seminary, but more importantly, in an amazing country which is so filled with ruchnius and an opportunity in each and every step along the way to take in and to grow. And it's a year of incredible growth. And so I wanted to focus on a few things to consider in terms of building ourselves. That's what life is about, trying to continually, as adults as well, build ourselves. In that context, to start with Parshas Truma, to think about Parshas Truma within Sefer Shmos. If we took a theme of Sefer Shmos, if you had to give me a theme, we'll take some audience participation. What would you describe as the theme of Sefer Shmos? Yes?
Redemption.
Okay, redemption is a good word. Other thoughts? I sat in on a shiur like a month ago. Girls had a lot to say. Yes?
Sorry. It's kind of like a continuation of the creation.
Okay, in what way?
Well, we come together as a nation, we run Torah, and we start to do Mishkan and kind of get all the laws.
So I would really focus on probably two things. One is what's said, redemption or a journey, right? There's a journey from being slaves to Eretz Yisrael to freedom. One way of looking at it is in terms of a journey. Another thing is the formation of a nation, right? We form Klal Yisrael. And most of Sefer Shmos really fits into those themes. The outlier would be Truma and the subsequent parshios that talk about the building of the Mishkan. Because the reality is the building of Mishkan has nothing to do, if we think about it, with the formation of a nation. As we understand, Shmos, Va'era, Bo, Bishalach, Yisro, all of that is this journey. All of that is creating the nation. Kitisa will continue that theme a little bit. There's Cheda Egel, and then there's the tshuva after that. All of that centers around what it means to form a nation. The building of a Mishkan doesn't seem to fit into what it means to create a nation. Doesn't seem to fit into a journey to Eretz Canaan. Doesn't seem to fit into the freedom from slavery. So why is Parshas Truma in, or why is the Chanukah Sa Mishkan altogether in Sefer Shmos? And just to push it a little further, if we think about the Svarim in Chumash, there is a Sefer that would seem to fit very well into, right? What Sefer is that? Vayikra, right? Because Vayikra talks about the Karbanos, all of the Avoda that's done in the Mishkan. So one would think the best way to start the Avoda is let's tell us about the construction of the Mishkan. So why is it that the construction of the Mishkan finds its place in Sefer Shmos? And to think about it, what I want to think about is growth as a person. Growth as an individual, as a human being, right? When we are children, and hopefully we outgrow this at some point, we have an automatic reaction to anything that doesn't go our way, right? If we don't like the food that's put out in front of us, when you're a child, what do? Cry, you complain, right? If you don't like the clothing in your wardrobe, what do as a child? You complain. Again, hopefully we outgrow it. But what if you don't like an assignment that a teacher gave you, what do? We complain, right? That's our gut reaction as a child. Anything which doesn't go our way, instinctively we complain. Somehow when we mature, as we become an adult, what changes in terms of our approach? Instead of complaining, what do we learn to do? What do we learn to do? Participation? We learn to adapt. Okay, what else? Problem solve, right? There's this switch. All of a sudden we learn to problem solve. What exactly is changing within that time? What changes from that mentality of complaining, the mentality of problem solving? So the reality is, as a child, we are, in one word, takers. That's what we do. We take, we take, we take. That's how HaKadosh Baruch Hu made us as little children. So if something doesn't fit into what I want to take, what do? I complain, because it doesn't fit into this prism that I'm supposed to take. As an adult, what shift? Instead of being a taker, what do I become? A giver. Right? And so all of a sudden, once I become a giver, my mentality shifts. It's no longer about what's in it for me. It's no longer about does it fit into what I want. I start to shift into problem-solving mode. And that is that's the growth of an individual, and that's also the growth of Klal Yisrael. So, right, Jonathan Sachs points out that that's essentially what's happening here in Sefer Shmos. As a nation, the beginning of our nation, or the beginning of trying to form Klal Yisrael, we complain a lot. And if we look through, especially the early parts of Sefer Shmos, again, it doesn't end. We know that if we look through Bamidbar, Klal Yisrael does still complain at times. But certainly their infancy, when they leave Mitzrayim, if they're hungry, what do? They complain. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us the man, right? And then we say, wait a second, the man is good, but I want meat. So what do we do then? We complain. We're thirsty, we complain. Right, there's a beautiful vort from the Kutzkarov when he describes they couldn't drink the water from Mara kimarimhim, because we often translate it as it was bitter, the water, but the Kutzkarov points out that kimarimhim is plural, and that can't really describe water, so he says kimarim bnei Yisrael is bitter. They had this mentality of complaining, because that was the infancy, that was the childhood of Klal Yisrael. Now, all of a sudden, HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks in Parshas Truma and says, if I want to shift their mentality, if I want to shift this perspective of Klal Yisrael, I want them to grow up, I want them to mature, what do I need to do? I need to change their mentality. Instead of being takers, what do I need them to become? Givers. So how am I going to get them to become givers? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, until now, I've been in this world because I put myself in this world. Now I want Klal Yisrael to do something on their own. I want Klal Yisrael to create a home for me. I want Klal Yisrael to shift from being takers to being givers. They are now going to give me a home. In order to give me a home, what does each and every member of Klal Yisrael need to do? What do they need to do? Everyone needs to donate. And that's Parshas Truma. And that's where Isaac suggests that's exactly why Truma is in, or the Chanukah HaMishkan, the building of the Mishkan in general, is in Sefer Shmos, so that we shift our mentality to becoming givers, shifting from takers to givers. That's part of the journey. That's part of our maturation as a nation, is to appreciate that role of giving. And if we think about it for a minute, and look in your source sheet, source number 4, this is a beautiful Mamar Chazal. We say it in davening. In Israel, I think we say it daily in davening. Otherwise, it's the Gemara at the very end of Maseches Brachos. The Gemara tells the following: Amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Tamidi Chacham Marbim Shalom Ba'olam Shenamar V'chol Banayich Limudei Hashem V'Rav Shalom Banayich. So Rabbi Elazar said the name of Rabbi Chanina, Tamidi Chacham bring peace to the world, and then he gives this phrase, and it seems like a cute play on words. The pasuk says V'chol Banayich Limudei Hashem V'Rav Shalom Banayich. It's describing Tamid Chachamim, they bring peace to the world because all of your children learn the words of Hashem and they build. And then here's the play on words. Al Tikri Banayich, don't say Banayich, my children. Ela Bonayich. What's Bonayich? Builders. So what exactly is Rabbi Elazar Amar Rabbi Chanina saying? Again, it's a cute play on words, but what's the meaning behind this phrase? So Rabbi Sachs points out that there's a shift. Banayich, if we want to bring peace to the world, we can't be banim, children, because again, children are takers. Rather, if we want to bring peace and harmony to the world, we want to be contributors. Instead of being children, we have to shift to being bonayich, builders. Builders are givers. I invest myself in building something. I shift that mentality. So to bring peace and harmony to the world, instead of being a taker, I have to view myself as a giver. The same idea is captured in Source 3 from a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that Hillel teaches us. Hu haya omer, Hillel used to say the following: Im eina ni li, mi li. If I'm not for myself, who will be for me? Ukeshani la'atzmi, when I am for myself, mani, what exactly am I accomplishing? And if we think about these two phrases, right, and line them up with each other and really think about them, they seem to contradict each other. Why? Because what does the first phrase focus on? Im ein ani li, mi li. What should a person's focus be? Himself. If I'm not for me, im ein ani li, if I'm not for me li, who will take care of me? If I don't make sure to take care of myself, no one will take care of me. But But then the next phrase, kishani latzmi, if I am for myself, mani. What's the focus of that? Is that critical of or complimentary of someone who's self-centered? Critical. Right? So two phrases, both from Hillel, side by side in the Mishnah, seem to contradict each other. So how could we understand both of them? So Shimon Shkup, one of the great gedolim of the early 20th century, says the following. He says the two are actually meant to be complementary. There are different ways to view me. A baby, as we've been describing, is born with an innate self-centeredness. A baby, everything revolves around them. And that's how HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us. So that's the beginning of the Mishnah. It says a person is always going to think about taking care of oneself. However, how does one define self? If self is self-centered, if taking care of me is only focused on me, so says Hillel, Ma'ani, what exactly am I accomplishing? What's the alternative? The alternative is to take that sense of caring, the same way I care for myself, but expand me. So instead of me being this individual, what if all of a sudden me became every single girl in this seminary? What if we started to think that I don't care only about myself, but actually I care more about every other person here? Or what if I was actually willing to be even more expansive than that and say, you know what me means? Me means all of Klal Yisrael. So the same way that I'm born innately with that sense of taking care of myself, if I take that nature and I start to shift it instead of focusing on me, so that's the second part of the Mishnah, is focus it on other people. View other people as part of my family. View other people as people who I need to take care of. And again, that's the same theme of being able to take that sense of being a taker and shift it to being a giver, to caring for other people. And the beautiful thing is that we know in this week's Parsha, it's one of the beautiful ideas, is we say it sometimes with the word Natan, but it comes up with the word Vinasnu. Vinasnu is, I think, the one of the bigger palindromes in the Hebrew alphabet, because it reads the same way forwards and backwards. And I think it's the Baal HaTurim who suggests the reason for that is because when one gives, they end up getting back as much in return. And we think about that's really what it is to live in a society of givers, is that everyone ends up benefiting from it. And we don't give so that we can get in return, but when we're part of a society of givers, everyone ends up a winner. There's a beautiful story that's told of a wedding hall in Yerushalayim. I assume it's still a wedding hall called Wolf Hall. And Wolf Hall was run by Yad Eliezer. It's an old story, so again, I don't know if it's still a wedding hall or not. But this wedding hall called Wolf Hall, which was run by a tzedakah organization, Yad Eliezer, was a wedding hall that had two banquet halls in it. They had, the first one was called Ulam Aleph, and Ulam Aleph was a larger wedding hall. And then there's Ulam Bet, was a smaller wedding hall. Both wedding halls were very simple wedding halls. They were meant for families that couldn't afford really a beautiful wedding. They were very, very, they were heavily subsidized, they were very cost effective. And one day in March, two couples happened to have gotten engaged at the same time. And the first couple called this Wolf Hall, and they went in and they reserved the larger hall. They were the first couple, they were both available. So naturally they said, we'd like the larger wedding hall, and they reserved this Ulam Aleph. A couple days later, the second couple went to the wedding hall, and they also wanted Ulam Aleph. They wanted a larger wedding hall. They had friends and family coming in from America, and they didn't think they'd fit in Ulam Bet. The caterer said, I'm sorry, but there's a couple that already reserved Ulam Aleph. It's not available. We can give you Ulam Bet. So they said, okay, we'll take Ulam Bet for now, but is there any way that we can get Ulam Aleph? They said, we can give you the name of the couple that reserved Ulam Aleph, and you can call them. If you could work it out amongst yourselves, it's fine with us. So the second couple went home and called the first couple and said, you know, we're expecting a large crowd. Is there any chance you could give us that larger wedding hall? We'd greatly appreciate it. And the first couple talked to their parents about it, and their parents said, you know, while we would love to be able to help someone else, we don't know what our numbers are going to look like. You know, what's fair is fair. We reserved Ulam Aleph. It really would seem to be irresponsible of us to give that up without knowing that we could even fit in Ulam Bet. And so the couple called back the second couple and said, you know, we're so sorry, but we don't know what our numbers are going to look like. We're going to hold on to Ulam Aleph. And as the wedding dates got closer, the first couple went to daven a Kever Rachel. We know Kever Rachel is a beautiful place to be able to daven. We pour our hearts out to Rachel Imenu. And as this Kala was sitting and davening a Kever Rachel, she started to think to herself, why is it that we daven a Kever Rachel? What's so special about Rachel Imenu? She started to think to herself that Rachel Imenu's marriage was built on one thing. What's that one thing that defined the marriage of Rachel Imenu? What did Rachel do at the time of her original marriage? She what? She was Mevater. She gave up her place for her sister, right? Think about that. Think about the Mesiras Nefesh. Like, literally, you're looking forward to your wedding day. It's the day of your wedding day, and you say, my sister is going to be embarrassed. My sister's going to feel bad about herself. I'm going to give up my place for my sister. That's incredible Vatranos. That's incredible self-sacrifice. And so this Kala is sitting there and saying, we turn to Rachel Imenu. Rachel davens on our behalf, because who else can represent Klal Yisrael better than someone who's mevater, someone who's willing to give up what she rightfully deserved for someone else? That's the foundation of a beautiful marriage, is each couple, each member of the couple being able to be mevater. And she said to herself, how could I not be mevater? And she went home, she asked her parents' permission, she said, you know, I think we should give up the wedding hall. I think we should be willing to trade. I know it may be tighter for us. I know it may be less comfortable for us. I know it's not necessarily the hall of my dreams, but you know what? If it'll give us any zechuyos for it to be the marriage of our dreams, it's worth it. And her parents blessed their decision, and they called the second couple, and they said to the second couple, we've been thinking about it. It sounded like your need for Ulam Aleph is more important than our need. Please take the wedding hall. And the second couple thanked them so much, and they each celebrated their wedding so beautifully, so joyously. Everything was amazing. After the wedding, the first couple who celebrated their wedding in Ulam Bet, now in the smaller one, who was Mevater and celebrating the second wedding hall, went to pay the caterer to settle the bill. And the most remarkable thing happens. The caterer says to them, you'll never believe this, but we got a call from a family in America. And this family in America was celebrating a wedding, and Baruch Hashem, the family in America didn't want to just celebrate their wedding by themselves. They wanted to do what we call a twinning simcha. They wanted to also sponsor a simcha in Eretz Yisrael. And they called us up, and their thought was, again, it's a heavily subsidized wedding hall. It's a wedding hall for families that can't afford it so much. There's probably a family that can't afford a simcha so easily. And of the two wedding halls, which is going to be the wedding hall of the family that likely can't afford as much? Not the bigger, nicer Ulam Aleph, but the less ostentatious, the simpler Ulam Bet. And so they called and they said, we want to sponsor the chasana, the wedding that was taking place in Ulam Bet. So you'll never believe it, but your wedding has been covered every single cost from A to Z. What's powerful about this story, and it's not a fairy tale that life always works this way, but when we participate in a circle, in a community of giving, so that's where we live. We then live in a community of giving, and that's Vinasnu. That when we give, we get back in return. And again, that's not why we give, but that's an outgrowth of what it means to be sensitive and thoughtful in our giving. So that's one thought in terms of what it means to grow, is think about growth and shifting our mentality. And it's an amazing age to really think about it, to shift from takers to givers. And certainly a lot of the year is appropriately taking. It's appropriately thinking about how can I grow. But part of my growth has to involve shifting my mentality and thinking about how do I give to other people. I want to go transition to a second point. And that is thinking about the construction of the Mishkan. And there's an idea that comes up in several different ways within the building of the Mishkan. And it starts with the menorah. When we think about constructing the menorah, so we know that Moshe is commanded to construct the menorah. But what's the problem? Rashi already talks about this. It's very difficult to understand what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is describing exactly. And then to build it, because it has to all be out of one solid gold piece. So ultimately, who really builds the menorah? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Sfas Rebbe says, if all of that is going to happen anyway, why did Hashem first have to tell Moshe to build the menorah? Have Moshe get frustrated in trying to build the menorah, and then have HaKadosh Baruch Hu ultimately build the menorah for him? Why not just have the menorah come down for Moshe Rabbeinu to begin with? And the Sfas Emes points out that this is a yesod, this is an idea for us to consider. In general, what success means is, what growth looks like, is there's a vision for growth. Moshe had to understand what I want, what this menorah is supposed to look like, and there's effort. And if we have a vision, if we have a goal in mind, and we invest the effort will not always directly and naturally lead to that end result, But HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us siyata d'shmaya. And that's what Hashem wanted Moshe Rabbeinu to see with the menorah. Moshe, this is what I want it to look like. There's a vision. There's effort, Moshe. You're trying. But ultimately, Hashem says, I'll give you a bracha that'll work out. I will give you the siyata d'shmaya that'll work out. And that's the amazing thing about sometimes how this works in terms of our growth. Rav Druck, there's a beautiful sefer called Eish Tamid from Rav Druck, in which he talks about different ideas from the Parsha. And he points out that there's an allusion to the three Ketarim in this week's Parsha. We know there's a Keser Kahuna, Keser Malchus, and Keser Torah. And which is the greatest of those three Ksarim? Which is the greatest of those three crowns? So Chazal tells us the Keser Torah is the greatest of the three crowns. And the Medrash tells us, we see it in the Psukim. Why? Because by two of them, by the Keser Malchus and the Keser Kahuna, the Torah says, Va'asisa lo, and you shall build it. For the Keser Torah, it says, Va'asisa alav. So there's a difference in words. Va'asisa lo for two of them, Va'asisa alav for the Keser Torah. And Rav Druck wonders, that's what the Medrash tells us, but how does Va'asisa alav indicate that the Keser Torah is greater than the other Ksarim? Va'asisa lo means that I'll make it for you. Va'asisa lo, and I'll make it on you. What's the difference between for you and on you? So Rav Druck says something fascinating. He says, Keser Kahuna and Keser Malchus are hereditary. Right? We know that Kahuna, I'm a Kohen because my father's a Kohen. A Melech is a Melech because who is the Melech before him? His father. So it's innate in a person. A person built into them, Va'asisa lo, built into them, is this hereditary gene, either for Kahuna or for Malchus. A person doesn't need to do anything. Of course, they should try to refine themselves, but it's innate, it's inborn, it's natural, it's automatic. Va'asisa alav means it's external. And Keser Torah, says Rav Druck, what happens is, if a person invests himself, if a person tries, if a person puts in all of the effort that they can, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu blesses them with siyata d'shmaya, Hashem blesses us with success. And so the greatness of Keser Torah is that if a person tries and tries and tries, it's not Va'asisa lo, it's not part of me, but it's Va'asisa alav, it's placed on top of me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu showers me with that bracha, it happens. And I came across a powerful story of a young man who was drafted to the United States Army at the beginning of the Korean War. And the Korean War was a war that was not very successful for members of the United States Army. Unfortunately, tens of thousands of soldiers died. And one Friday afternoon, this Jewish soldier came to the rabbi on the base, to the chaplain, and said, he gave him three letters. And he said, I need you to do me a favor. Both of my parents are Holocaust survivors. And they're old, they're not in good shape. If I get sent to serve in Korea, my parents do not have the ability to withstand that. Their health will deteriorate and they will not survive that news. And I have three letters. One letter is my draft letter that I'm supposed to be shipped out to Korea next week. And the next two letters are letters I have from each of my parents' doctors testifying to the fact that their health cannot withstand me going to Korea. Can you please ask on my behalf to be switched, that I shouldn't be sent to Korea? And the chaplain said, sure, you know, what's the person's name? He told him the name and he said, oh, this person's known to really be very, very stubborn. I could try, but it's unlikely that we'll see any success. But going into Shabbos morning, the chaplain said, okay, if I'm going to do this, I need to try. And time is of the essence. So Shabbos morning, he walked 6 miles to the commander, the general, whatever his title was, to ask for a compassionate transfer for this person. He walks over to this general. The general, you know, is like 6'4", does not look like much of a schmoozer, says to him, what can I do for you, Rabbi? And he explains the situation, and he sees on the rabbi's lapel is like a picture of the Luchos. And he says, you see those tablets on your lapel? Just like they're unbreakable, so am I. No one gets a compassionate transfer in my unit. Sorry, but the answer is no. And the rabbi sees there's literally, this guy's like an immovable object. And he turns around and he starts to walk back to where he came from. And this general looks at him and says, Rabbi, where's your Jeep? When you drive back to where you came from, He said, well, General, it's our Sabbath. I can't drive on our Sabbath. So he said, but where'd you come from? And he told him where he started from. He said, that's 6 miles away. You walked here? And the rabbi says, yes. And you're going to walk back? And the rabbi says, yes. And he says, so you're walking 12 miles to ask for, to plead for this guy. How well do you know him? And he said, I don't know him, but he's a fellow Jew. And his parents' health, their lives are in danger. If my sacrifice to walk 12 miles for him, it's the least I could do. And the general looks at him and says, Rabbi, if you're willing to do that for this person, then what I could do for him is get him a compassionate transfer. And he says, come with me into my office. And he calls the, you know, whoever the commanding officer is. And he says, here's this person's name. He must have a compassionate transfer. And what struck me about this story is this notion of siyata d'shamayim, and the same idea of keser Torah. The keser Torah means if we try our hardest, we don't always have to know rationally why it's going to work, how it's going to work, but if we invest ourselves with Mesiris Nefesh in doing what's right, the amazing thing is HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us Siyata Dishmaya. Sometimes it takes a while for us to see it. Sometimes the story takes longer to develop. It's not always instantaneous like this, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us a promise that there will be success. And in Mir Tzah Hashem, we're able to see that success. So I know time is limited. I want to end with one last point. And that is that we know the midos of the Aron Kodesh were all half sizes, right? They're all this v'mechza, this and a half. And the Mepharshim talk about why a half. And we know that part of that is to teach us that when it comes to Torah, we always need to be aspirational. We should never view it as complete. There's always more to learn. There's always more to grow. There's always more to achieve. But there's a flip side to it as well, which is that the midos all had half sizes to them. And what's incredibly important to consider, especially as you are literally at that point, slightly past the halfway point, is that we always have to be aspirational. We always have to have, hopefully, lofty goals of what we want to achieve. And that's for life. For life, we always need to know, wherever I am today, I need to have more. I want to grow more. I want to continue yearning. I want to continue aspiring. I want to continue growing. And at the same time, alongside that, there's a risk to an aspirational life, which is sometimes not appreciating what we've already achieved. Again, the midos of the Aron Kodesh were all half sizes to appreciate that as much as I still want to grow, it's worthwhile, it's appropriate to take stock and to say, but wow, look at the half that I've already achieved. We're not at zero. We're at 50. We're at a point along a continuum. And again, it's a lifelong continuum, but if we never stop and appreciate what we've already achieved, so we won't have a Simchas HaTorah. We won't have a love and an appreciation for who we are and what we can continue to become. Because again, what we can continue to become is a continuation of what we've already achieved. So again, hopefully, as my time ends, just to try to tie it all together, to appreciate that we shift our mentality from takers to givers, to think about how can I enhance the lives of other people? How can I problem solve? How can I bring a smile to other people? That's what it is, Al Tikri Banayach El Bonayach, to bring peace and harmony to the world. I have to think about other people. To appreciate that, like the menorah, like the Keser Torah, that if I try everything that I can, I have a vision of what I want to achieve. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of the rest. He blesses us with Siyata Dishmaya, but to appreciate as much as I need to aspire, as much as a life of Torah growth and religious growth is never complete, is always something that I'm going to continue to yearn for. It's built on, predicated on appreciating, but I'm halfway there. I'm a part along the journey. I still have already built half an Amma, half a measure, half of a whatever, because being able to be proud and confident in what I've achieved already is a critical step towards that journey of life of growth. Thank you very much, and everyone should have a wonderful day.